Hello, welcome to Control Intelligence. I'm Mike Bassador, Editor-in-Chief, and I'm joined today by Jagunathan Raghunathan, the Director of Cyber-Physical Security Services at Bureau Veritas, and co-chair of the PLC Security Top 20 list. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Sure, thanks for joining us. Now, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, issued this past week an alert regarding a significant increase in the cyber threat actors targeting PLCs in the water, wastewater sector. And CISA is urging all critical infrastructure owners, operators, and integrators to remove publicly exposed PLCs and other OT devices from the internet ASAP. Threat actors are targeting exposed PLCs, and they have modified passwords to lock out operators and disconnected the PLCs by changing IP addresses. First, Jagunathan, can you tell me a little bit about the PLC Security Top 20 list? What is that?
So the PLC Security Top 20 list is a volunteer-based industrial initiative that kind of identifies the most common cybersecurity practices for programmable logic controllers and industrial hardware, right? So it focuses practical actions that owners, machine builders, system integrators, and operators can implement to reduce risk across the PLC lifecycle. So where these specific items and key themes can be beneficial is to eliminate direct industrial internet exposure, change default credentials, enforce minimum level of authentication and authorization, secure remote access pathways, maintain certain level of integrity through backup mechanisms that are available for logics and configurations, restrict control level engineering workstation access for key applications that are used in engineering of these hardware, monitor for unauthorized changes, manage the overall firmware and patching of those particular controllers, segment them on industrial networks, and apply these kinds of secure supply chain practices and third-party access management practices. So the recent CISA alert kind of reinforces several of these direct principles directly, particularly removing of PLCs from the internet, changing of the default passwords, and restricting remote access for only essential personnel. So that way, least privileged concepts are maintained across the PLC's life cycle so that they maintain known good state throughout their entire life cycle.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, best practices for sure. Yeah, very great advice. So how did the list come about? I know you and you're part of a trio, right, that kind of heads up the group and created the group. And what is it that the group provides? Who benefits from the list?
So it was a group-founded initiative. It founded almost 4 to 5 years ago. It came out of a few conferences where people were talking about PLC security and what needs to be done from an engineering perspective, right? And not enough guidance existed from the standards committees and the typical standards that focus on industrial cybersecurity specific to PLCs, right? So this entire volunteer-driven initiative kind of started from there. Admericia, who originally started this initiative a few years ago, kind of established a version one of those PLC security practices. And over time, me and John Kingsley, who are currently the co-chairs for this committee, have taken this idea to kind of expand on that in terms of different types of OEMs that can participate in initiatives like this, how practical implementation guidance can be provided using these kinds of standard requirements and how they can be easily applied to the industry as a whole, right? So these can be applied across multiple levels. They can be applied by OEMs themselves before they ship the builds off to their customers, right? Or they can be applied at an implementation stage by system integrators or by anyone who is touching a PLC for a client's environment, or by the client's security teams and engineering and operations teams themselves. Because none of these are security skilled requirements, right? These are engineering focused requirements which focus on using the hardware's inherent controls to kind of bolster the security of security practices that can be built for a programmable logic controller.
Right. So why is it that PLCs are, I mean, what makes them vulnerable? What is it about a PLC that's just,
yeah,
I'm open?
Yeah. So PLCs, as most of them know, have been designed from the late 1940s, 1950s, when the Industrial Revolution with happening with Ford, and that's where it's kind of been maturing, right? But the maturity of it, we have a lot of functionality today that has been developed by various OEMs. But the cybersecurity side of things kind of started after Stuxnet happened in late 2000s, right? So
Sure.
Stuxnet was kind of like the primary drivers behind PLCs being manipulated to do things that they were not intended to do. So many PLCs were designed decades ago with reliability and availability as their primary objectives and not cybersecurity. So historically, these PLCs have operated in isolated industrial environments where physical access was restricted, networks were proprietary, internet connectivity was uncommon. Threat actors were considered a realistic design requirement. They were not considered as part of the threat lifecycle, right? But that has consistently changed over the last 15, 20 years as technology has continued to evolve. We have like internet-connected devices now. We have like cloud-hosted SCADA platforms. We have like AI-driven programming and all these kinds of technology initiatives that has changed the attack path so much. But the basics foundation in terms of what a PLC can do in terms of security capabilities has fairly remained stagnant, right? So because of that, what we do is we kind of take it into two parts. What is the capability available for the PLC today? And that's what PLC Security Initiative focuses on in terms of inherent controls that can be applied. And what capabilities can the OEMs do to kind of build more capabilities into their products, where we work with OEMs to kind of say, hey, what capabilities doesn't exist today in your devices and how controls can be built in terms of using their asset itself to build the control or set up compensating and mitigating control mechanisms for PLCs to reduce the overall residual risk of PLCs being exposed, right? So as a result, what happens is many PLCs today lack strong authentication mechanisms, have limited logging capabilities, have support for many legacy protocols, which are open text protocols that kind of communicate over clear text, like Modbus, for example, right? It has been in the industry for so long that the secure authentication capabilities don't exist in standard editions of Modbus, but still it is the most commonly used protocol in today's day and age too.
Right.
So all these kind of make sure that configuration changes go with minimum security controls, right? So that's the current state. So the objective is they have to change that into a long-term and a medium-term future state where they apply things that are possible and realistically possible with today's capability, and then expand that into future capabilities wherever these capabilities become available from OEMs. So these CISA-observed threat actors are successfully tracking these exposed PLCs, right? There are initiatives, say, for example, like the Shodan, which kind of tracks out remote-controlled infrastructure, which are available and exposed over the internet. So those are information that are readily accessible through open-source intelligence, and other open-source intelligence sources can be implored to kind of say, hey, how do we make sure that we identify what of these issues exist in a particular environment, and how do we keep tracking them throughout the remediation lifecycle?
Right. So you spoke before about 20 years ago and just the way that access has changed over the past 20. I mean, I can remember 20 years ago where, the access point was there's a firewall, and then you have to grant access through the firewall, and you'd be on the phone calling them, okay, I'm going to open it now, and okay, you're in, go ahead, and then you'd wait, and when you're done, okay, and now it's closed. I mean, it was very, very much controlled because
Control.
there was no automation as part of that. But how is that, certainly in the past 5 to 10 years, that especially with COVID and remote access, that's just exploded. Why is it? Is it just for remoting into the PLC for programming, or is the PLC exporting data, or what is the data that's being transferred back and forth?
So multiple things are happening, right? Yeah, like you rightly said, COVID is one of the biggest differentiations that has happened over the last few years. Industries needed to start adapting because they no longer had a workforce which had access to the industrial environment, right? So a lot of the things that were not safety critical were done through remote roles. So engineers kind of started becoming remote, operations personnel started becoming remote, cloud infrastructure started coming in to support more centralized data systems that are hosted on the cloud, so that the dependency on on-prem infrastructure slowly started getting blurred, right? So hybrid infrastructure started taking its place. So because of that, what's happened over the last few years is a lot of companies do their own ways, right? Connecting a device to the internet can happen through multiple ways. You can directly connect it using a 4G or an LTE connected modem and have your engineers team viewer into a particular infrastructure, right? That's not ideally the most secure method, but there are multiple levels of maturity when organizations look at controls like these, right? So it depends on how strictly your network is controlled, how many remote access tools you have, how you control telemetry data and things like that. That kind of varies, right? Another couple of use cases that I can think about is telemetry data, right? Today, a lot of logging and monitoring solutions take a lot of this telemetry data offsite kind of to process a lot of things, to do historians and those kinds of use cases. So data goes into centralized data warehouses where the data is being available for either for action or for feedback, right? So that data has to leave the on-prem solution to kind of have that data available for the global use cases that companies are trying to build, right? And then the third aspect that I want to highlight is AI, of course, right? With the advent of AI coming in, there are a lot of coding initiatives that are coming up around programming, for example. IEC 61131-1 programming languages are being automated to a certain extent using AI programming softwares that are being built by OEMs, that are built by external companies. So what's happening with that is the explosion happens in terms of authentication usage, right? So the number of service accounts that is essentially being used by an artificial intelligence kind of explodes, right? These are non-human identities. They're not attributable to a single person. So it makes it that much more difficult to have that non-repudiation tracking in terms of what actions that particular non-human identity is doing. And it's happening at machine speed, right? So even if someone detects something happening, how can someone respond to a human with a human pace for something happening at a non-human level, right? So that becomes almost a impossible situation to kind of handle. So because of these kinds of use cases that are slowly developing in the industry, and a lot of IT-enabled service organizations and OEMs focusing their capabilities on digital transformation, the PLCs are becoming much more open these days, right? But that still comes with the limitations that the PLC already has in terms of hardware because of the issues that we've already spoke about. So that becomes like a situation which kind of becomes a toxic combination for setting up secure architectures for areas like these.
Great. Excellent explanation. The both you previously and then in the CISA alert, one of the recommendations was for firewall or VPN of some sort. What is the, I know we're running short on time, but what is the benefit of something like that in order to provide like an air gap of sort to the PLC? What is the real benefit of it?
So air gap in today's technological age has almost become a myth, right? So it's almost too difficult to keep implementing and have that sustained operations in place. So in an ideal scenario, what needs to happen is controlled access, right? Like we spoke about, having that controlled access from a network perspective in terms of different endpoints that can connect into a particular critical infrastructure network, which of those people have roles in terms of accessing that software, having granular role-based access control in terms of how those are set up on engineering software, safety software, maintenance software, and those roles tied to individuals, right? With the principle of least functionality and least privilege kind of applied, with compensating and mitigating controls around detection of various kinds of incidents and threats that can happen, right? Identification of a baseline in terms of what your PLCs can do, what ports, protocols, and services it can communicate on, and kind of having monitoring use cases set up around it can help set up the detection mechanism using the telemetry, using RFC compatible data sources for the data to be available in centralized data stores so that any deviation from the path of these controllers or the user behaviors can be monitored and appropriate action can be taken, right? And all this is not to say that this becomes a perfect solution, right? There are always going to be gaps in terms of how a solution can be broken. And industry research is always going to be pointing towards new ways that the technology is being used in terms of attacking these kinds of infrastructure, right? But it is a continuous evolving maturity. And we can't stop at any point because the attackers never stop in terms of evolution, right from the 2005 when the first industry-specific malware came out, to today, where there are targeted things that are happening to critical infrastructure. There's a combination of things that are happening, like countries, nation states are focusing on lay of the land attacks, where you can use things that the engineering and operations teams would generally use so that they can evade detection techniques, right? So, because of that, a combination of this, not one control, but a combination of these controls would be the best combination to understand based on the risk of your infrastructure, the risk of your functionality being exposed unnecessarily where it's not intended to.
Great. One final question. What can system integrators and machine builders take away from this alert and maybe a lesson learned?
Yeah. I mean, perhaps the most important lesson learned from the CISA alert is stop delivering internet exposed PLCs, right? If internet ex access is required, set up minimum things that are needed from a secured access remote gateway perspective. Provide jump servers or bastion hosts to kind of terminate the access at the perimeter level before someone can access. Set up minimum levels of role-based access control in terms of who needs access to it. If there are more sensitive data involved and sensitive processes involved, think about additional controls that can be placed on the wire, right? Like, say, for example, having a VPN set up to kind of ensure that point-to-point communication happens in a more secure way. And the other area the integrators and machine builders can start thinking about is eliminating default credentials, right? It's not a more difficult solution. Use unique passwords, require passwords to be changed during the commissioning process of a particular PLC, set up document credential ownership of a particular process, have someone own the credentials as part of the organization so that if you're delivering credentials to an organization, there needs to be some accountable party inside the organizations to change it from the default to whatever the organizational policies is, right? And then on the other side, when commissioning happens or you want to fast track timelines, we often employ methods like deploying cellular modems or like having like circumvented methods for the engineers to do things in a fast way, right? But that creates a loophole for most things. So one of the most important findings in the CISA's alert is the prevalence of undocumented cellular connections, right? Because of that, integrators should rely on inventorying of all their remote access control paths, document all the cellular modems and routers as part of the baseline, include them in the cybersecurity assessment, and transfer that documentation to operations so that you know what your baseline of cellular modems in use are, and then you can control them through legitimate methods so that if something happens outside the baseline, that is being triggered using your telemetry and monitoring, right? And then the last part of it, what I want to focus on is design cybersecurity from the start, right? Don't think about cybersecurity right when it goes live, but rather think about through the construction phases, through the issued for construction phases, and through the design phases. Design cybersecurity as the requirement from a start, like how we would do with safety, availability, reliability, and performance, right? Cybersecurity should not be bolted on after commissioning and should not be just a responsibility of operations at the end of it, but it has to be secured through the design lifecycle so that it gets handed over in a secure manner to operations. And last but not least is maintain the recovery capability, right? So machine builders should be able to provide last known good PLC backups, should be able to provide restoration procedures, should be able to provide rollback plans, configuration baselines in terms of what they have done before they hand over to a site, right? And appropriate change management documentation, because that's something that's realistically missing from a lot of industries. So CISA specifically recommends maintaining clear PLC images in case operations are locked out after a cyber attack, and maintaining on-site and off-site copies, or having like agreements in terms of with vendors to have escrow agreements so that they maintain your images even after you deploy your software into production. So the bottom line is the lessons learned from CISA's water sector alert is that PLCs are not inherently secure. The lesson is PLCs designed for isolated industrial environments have become high-risk assets when connected to the internet and connected to other technological advancements that we have today. So organizations gained significant operational benefits from remote connectivity during the COVID time, but have failed to implement security architectures consistently, right? So follow best practices, apply the modern approach to retain the business benefits of remote access with introduction of safe and secure methods, considering gateways, VPN, segmentations, authentication, monitoring, and lifecycle security controls, consistent with initiatives like the PLC Top 20 practices and other benchmarks that are available today.
Fantastic. Great answer. Great information.
Perfect.
Jagannathan, I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with us on Control Intelligence.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Control Intelligence. If you've enjoyed this episode of Control Intelligence and Endeavor B2B podcast, don't miss our older episodes and subscribe to find new podcasts in the future. You can find our podcast library at controldesign.com, or you can download all episodes on Podbean or via Apple Podcasts or Google Play.